It's not every day that I can say you're going to be hungry after listening to today's show, but if that's the worst thing that happens to you today, welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Rupiak. Farmers markets, gotta love them. And they're exploding in popularity across our region. Today, we're going to chew on this topic, and we'd like to get your thoughts. Which market do you like? Why do you go? What do you buy? What do you do when the cold weather comes? Do you go into withdrawal? Let us know. Our email is tfs@wshu.org, and you should check out our new and improved Facebook page, Full Story WSHU. Sure, look, we love to go to farmers markets, and for some, it's a place to hang and to socialize. But let's remember, they are a business, and they mean so much to the economy and to our region. Brian Hurlburt is joining us. He's the Commissioner of Agriculture for Connecticut. And Commissioner, last time we spoke with you, you weren't a commissioner. Congratulations on the appointment.
That's right.
Congratulations on your
appointment. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming back on with us. Always a pleasure to have you.
Happy to do so, and I appreciate your continued interest in Connecticut's agriculture.
Absolutely. Why the explosion in popularity for farmers markets?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a great phenomenon. And we've seen over the past decade consumer demand. You know, the buy local movement is here and strong in Connecticut, and because of Connecticut's proximity just to each other in our small geographic space, people know where their farms are, where their farmers markets are, and can get to them. So they're demanding it. And farmers are responding. We have 117 farmers markets in Connecticut. And when you think about that, you know, 169 towns, nobody has to go too far in order to get to the local farmers market and still have it be truly a local farmers market.
And they used to be for many just on the weekends, but now you can find them different days of the week.
That's right. Well, I used to work in downtown Hartford in a previous position. And between my home, my work, and my travel back and forth to work, and I think 4 days a week, I had access to a farmer's market, which really made it a lot easier for me and the other average consumers to visit a farmer's market, to see what's fresh, what's in season, to understand, you know, what is likely to be there on a week-to-week basis. And it's been a great way to really increase consumer access, in addition to finding ways for farmers to market their products, outside of a farm stand or trying to go the wholesale route.
All right, so let's touch on the money aspect. What do the farmers markets mean in terms of revenue for the farmers and for the state?
Yeah, farmers markets continue to be a major revenue stream for farmers. The University of Connecticut reported in 2015 that farmers market sales were worth about $90 million to the ag economy. And so that's real money. So people don't think about it when they're buying, a couple tomatoes or, some squash. But when you aggregate all of that, and thankfully we have our friends at UConn who can do that for us, it means a lot to the individual farmers, which is why you see so many farmers participating in so many markets. And the consumer dollar is there, the consumers are there, and it's really an integral part to their business plan.
Commissioner, if I remember right, didn't you work years ago at Wholesome Wave?
I did. I did, absolutely. And we were the national leaders on the farmers market doubling programs.
So you were working basically to get good, fresh foods to those in communities who maybe didn't have access to it. So I point that out because obviously you have the background in this. Is there any chance of getting more markets to parts of the state where fresh, healthy food is not as available as in other regions?
You know, we work very hard at the department, and given my background with food security and access issues, I've really put a spotlight on this. We're trying to expand the number of markets. In fact, we just had, at the beginning of the summer, a request from the Department of Social Services to see if the Department of Agriculture would write a letter in support of a grant for more EBT readers, which are the SNAP card readers at farmers markets. I said I didn't want to do a letter of support. I wanted to do a joint letter to demonstrate that the Department of Agriculture sees access to fresh fruits and vegetables for all consumers, regardless of their positions or place, to have the benefit of farmers markets and be able to use their SNAP cards. Because as we just talked about, there's so many in so many different places at so many different times, it makes it easier for those consumers who might work off shifts to still get to a market, or people who need public transportation, there might be one closer. And we had this year 35 markets participate in SNAP processing. So if you are enrolled in SNAP, you could go to any of 35 markets, and 18 of those 35 offer SNAP doubling. And so for the listeners out there who don't know what SNAP doubling is, so you could go to a farmer's market and see the market master, swipe your EBT card for $10 and receive $20 in coupons or vouchers or tokens to spend at the market. So you get to purchase whatever you want that's fresh, that's local, that you know is healthy and good for you and your family. And because we want to make sure that you're taking advantage of this full opportunity, the state and private partners and other organizations have put in for the opportunity to double that amount. So we're really extending the consumer dollar, making it available, making the produce available, and making the markets available so that everybody has access to those fresh fruits and vegetables.
It's an excellent program. Talk to me a little bit about regulation and safety. How do I know what I'm buying and eating has been tested, checked, approved for safety? How do I know also that what they're selling me is what they say it is?
Well, that's a great question. And as the local food movement has taken off, you know, consumers are paying more and more attention to these aspects. So the first thing that consumers should do is when they start going to farmers markets is ask questions. You know, what are your practices? You know, there are organic certified farms in Connecticut. There are organic method or organic practice pledges. So a farmer may not be an organic certified, but only use organic methods. There's also conventional farms that use an integrated pest management on their farms. So get to know who your farmer is and understand where you want to or what you want to value for the produce that you're buying. On top of that, The State Department of Agriculture, working with our sister agencies at the public health officials and the Department of Consumer Protection, have food safety requirements. And so we actually have a program where our state inspectors go out and work with farmers to make sure that the practices that they have on their farm, from planting, growing, cultivating, harvesting, and then processing, are in compliance with federal regulations. So we do that on the raw commodities. So the tomatoes, the squash, the cabbages and lettuces, and then our friends at the Department of Consumer Protection and the local public health officials do that for the processed goods. So your jams, your jellies, your salsas, and any of the baked goods that you're buying at the farmer's market. So consumers should, one, get to know their farmers, and two, understand that we at the state level do have, you know, a fair amount of oversight and work with our farmers to make sure that that what they're buying is safe and healthy. And one of the reasons we do this, Ron, is because we have responsibility to marketing as well. So it's not just the public health piece. But we don't want anybody getting sick from buying, kale at a farmer's market, because if that happened, you know, the publicity and the public awareness that would come out of it would be hugely detrimental to all of the farmers in Connecticut. So we really want to make sure that farmers are in compliance to protect the entire industry, and we take that responsibility very seriously.
Commissioner, I have about 2 minutes left. You mentioned then the number of...
I got 10 more.
You mentioned the number. you mentioned the number of farmers markets and how they've grown in the state, but there's still some communities that don't have them. If I wanted to start one in my community, how would I go about doing it?
They should call our office, and we will help them. kind of coordinate that and put them in the right direction at the Department of Agriculture. You know, we deal with so many farmers markets across the state that we can be a real vital resource. And, you know, the Department of Agriculture has a strong and long history of customer service, and we take that very seriously, and we want to continue it. So if you call us, we'll give you the guidance that you need, or email me, and I'll make sure that we get one of our employees who care very deeply about agriculture in Connecticut to respond to you and see if we can help you set up something. And you mentioned in the intro, farmers markets. You know, what we've been talking about here today is our spring, summer, and fall markets. We could do more winter farmers markets. And help get consumers access to some of our winter produce, too, because there's still a lot of neat stuff going on in Connecticut, even when people aren't thinking about it.
Absolutely. One of our guests who's coming up is going to talk about what they do when the weather turns cold. I mean, it was down in the 40s last night. It's happening already. I mean, I can't believe I was closing all the windows and throwing the blanket on. And but a lot of these markets still go on year-round.
Yeah. And that's, again, keeps the revenue for farmers, you know. When you're trying to do a business plan and understanding the cycles that you go through, having a place to sell things during the winter becomes very important for farms. They can recoup some of their investment in that crop, but also it gives them money to invest in the coming crop year. So it's really integral to the viability of Connecticut farms.
Commissioner, next time you're coming down to our neck of the woods, let us know, and we'll get you into the studio here.
I'd love to do that. I'll make sure to do that.
Sounds great. Brian Hurlburt is the Connecticut Commissioner of Agriculture. Thanks, Commissioner. Talk to you soon. I would like to welcome Lori Cochran to the program. And Lori is the Executive Director of the Westport Farmers Market. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
And I have to say that Lori is a trooper. She battled an accident on I-95 on the turnpike today, and she spent a lot of time to get here, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. It was worth it. I'm happy to be here.
How long has the Westport Farmers Market been around?
We are in our 13th year.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, Paul Newman and Michelle Nishan and Shelley Casson, who was a selectman, and some other people in Westport were who founded the market 13 years ago.
Do you remember what it was like back then, how unique farmers markets were?
I personally don't. I mean, truthfully, I grew up going to a farmers market every Saturday.
No kidding.
So, yeah,
where was that?
Roanoke, Virginia.
Okay.
And they actually have one of the oldest man-made farmers market structures in the country. And so it's still operating today.
Isn't that amazing? Because I know around here, when they first started appearing, everyone was like, what are those?
Yeah, totally. What are those things? Is there some fresh food there?
Fresh food. Food. We don't have to go to, I'm not going to name any names of supermarkets, but you know, we don't have to go there. We can actually go get something a little bit better.
Yeah. Tastes better. Supports your local economy.
How many vendors do you have?
So at our farmers market, we currently operate between 48 and 52 vendors on the summer basis. We operate for 10 months out of the year, and our winter market, which moves to Saturdays and goes inside a heated greenhouse, we operate at about 32 vendors. So on a weekly basis, you're going to see 32 vendors that are there.
And how do you decide who gets to be a vendor?
Well, it's funny because we were looking at the questions for this. I have really strict guidelines. One, it's all producer only. So that means all of my farmers have to be growing what they're selling. We would like all of our vegetable farmers are organic. Our fruit farmers are IPM, which is called Integrated Pest Management. And that means they use pests to treat something over a chemical.
Okay.
And then all of our prepared foods have to have one locally farmed ingredient in them in order to be sold. So that means if you go get a coffee, it has to have local dairy. If you get a tea that's there, it has to have local honey. The flour, they're getting local flour. If they have to have a percentage of, say, peach scones when peaches are in season and blueberries. And this means for the winter. So all of these vendors are having to freeze right now in order to be in our market. And we're tough. We know it. But the whole purpose of this is to support your local economy and to support your local small and mid-sized farmers.
So from how far away do the farmers come?
We have an allotment up to 150 miles that they can travel, which is a little long. Like a lot of most places are about 100 miles, but we actually have fish that comes out of Rhode Island from a vendor called Local Catch. And we've given an extension to him.
I know the Local Catch.
I know.
Delicious.
They're great. Delicious. And a great guy. Yes.
How many people show up?
So right now we're about 3,000 a week on a Thursday, 10 to 2. We're very grateful for everyone that comes. And then in the winter, it's a smaller space and we have some parking issues. So we're about 1,000 a week in the winter. The winter's so fun. It's in this heated greenhouse. I think people smuggle Bloody Marys in. Hope the health department's not listening. And everyone just sits around and really relax and eats and totally enjoys.
I have to tell you that in preparing my questions for this, and I go to my local farmer's market, I have a few in... This is going to sound so hoity-toity. In California, that I love to go to, the ones in Santa Monica are just amazing. But it's a scene, isn't it? I mean, I know people who will show up on the weekend on a Saturday morning, and they're there for a good chunk of the day.
Right. Yes. Yes. You show up at our market at 9:45. There are serious shoppers. You need to know what you want. You better be ready to get in your line. It's funny how people know each other now, or they've met in a line and now they're friends and they're farmers market friends. And then you have the lollygaggers that come in about 1:30 and they want to read the paper and have their lunch and grab their baguette and their cheese and their baskets. But, you know, farmers markets are like this introduction. It's a little bit like sports. I mean, in some ways, I feel like farmers markets are the JV team as you get in and people get introduced to them. I watch people always come and they grab a baguette and cheese at the beginning. And then a month from there, they've got a huge bag of groceries. And by the end of it, they've bought into a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture. And they're coming every week and now they're bringing their friends in. And so, you know, it's just this great evolution that I see people. It's an addiction. You start and you just can't stop.
It's absolutely true. And then once you appreciate and you come to understand the quality difference, and especially for the beef and for the poultry. I mean, chicken's tasting like chicken. And as you said, the seafood. And then, you know, come the winter, and then if you don't have a chance to go there, and then you go back to some of the old spots that you, and it's like, do I really have to go back to eating this?
Right. And we need to be thinking about that because, you know, and it is fun to think about farmers markets, and they are so much fun, but really, it's a place that you can have more impact than you have any idea that you're having, because you're showing up and you're buying directly from a farmer that has grown that produce, put the seed in the ground, is picking it, is hiring people to work, then take it to a farmer's market. You aren't paying a subsidy to the government. You are, and you can ask them exactly what they've used on it. So we have all these health issues. We're worried about plastic. You know, we have serious things that everyone's talking about. You get a chance to talk to them. Mm-hmm. You go to a grocery store. I mean, just think about it. So you walk in a grocery store, you grab your grocery cart, you put your hands on that super cold metal, and you're walking down the aisle. Does anybody talk to you? Do any of those boxes say anything to you? They have these nice little faces on them, but do those faces...
And you have no idea where they came from.
Yeah, they don't care about you, but you go to a farmer's market, you know, and you have to wait a little bit. You're out of your comfort zone. There may be a bug flying around. You know, I mean, it's a legit place.
So I have to tell you, I was down in Pennsylvania recently, and I stopped at a farmer's market there, and all their apples were out. And the woman who owns the place, I said to her, this so soon in the season? And she looked at me like I was from Mars. And she goes, have you heard about the climate crisis? She goes, our growing seasons down here are just different nowadays. And she goes, now's the time for apples. And I'm thinking, you know, later September, October, something like that. And she's saying, no, this is it. And this is the new normal. Are you finding that?
Well, I definitely wouldn't want to be the expert to speak to that for each farmer. I do think that the farmers are seeing different shifts, most certainly, and they are seeing things grow. Like this year, we didn't really see beans. I mean, we did not have a bumper crop of beans. Mm. Our tomatoes have been a little late. And, but yes, I mean, I do hear that a good bit. I always get a little hesitant of me saying a voice for a farmer on how they're growing. I do think things are shifting. There are also some varieties of apples that grow a little earlier that are harvesting now. There's a great farmer here in Connecticut, Blue Hill Orchards, and they're already harvesting a ton of apples because they're growing them that season. And they'd be a great person to ask because they would be able to tell you how the climate change is impacting them. Mm-hmm. It's impacting all of us. Let's be real. I mean,
Can I ask you before you go? So I show up at the farmer's market and I'd love to go to them. How do I know what I'm getting is safe, has been checked, is approved, that I don't have to worry?
Well, first of all, I love that you would ask that question. It's important. And I hope everyone hears what I'm saying here, that it is a fiduciary responsibility of a farmer's market the nonprofit that it may be the fiscal agent of a nonprofit, the town that a farmer's market is in, and especially the person or people that are running a farmer's market to ensure what is in those products at that market. And I list all of those because markets are run differently. We were one of the first 150 501c3 farmer's markets in the country. Hmm. And we've gotten that by working hard on our programming, but it is so important for you to know who the responsible party is when you go in there, because there are these things called jobbers, which mean there are these farmers that go out and they're buying produce from some other place and they're coming in and selling it as their own. For example, there's a farmer's market here in Connecticut they have a mango juice vendor that is in selling mango juice in these big plastic cups with this big plastic straw. That has nothing to do with local, has nothing to do with health. It is the antithesis of all that. So I just encourage shoppers, as I'm standing on my soapbox at the moment, to really make sure that you find someplace and you find someone of credibility that is going to tell you who and where you're buying stuff from. Because just because it says farmer's market over it doesn't mean it's the best product. Find the best places. Find people who really care about your food. If you ever have a problem, you can ask me and I can go talk to them and tell you whether or not they're legit or not. But ask questions. People, if somebody's real, they really want to talk about their product. They want to tell you about their cows, their chickens, their peas, their carrots, their kids. That's a real farmer. And it's a real baker. Anyone is real.
Absolutely. So it's buyer beware and do your homework.
Do your homework.
All right.
And come to our market.
And I'd love to get you back in the future, because I know you're also involved in trying to get healthier food into the schools for the kids.
Yes, I definitely put my fingers in a couple different areas in regards to food. But yes, I do care a lot about, and I think it's a great place for us to start, is with kids, and that we need to be focused. There's an organization called Food Corps that's here locally and in the state of Connecticut, and I think we could maybe be reaching out and doing a little more to support them as well.
Fantastic. Come back soon.
Great. I would love to. It was really nice meeting you.
Same here. Lori Cochran, who is the executive director of the Westport Farmers Market. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
It's the full story on WSHU. If you want to comment on what you're hearing, email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. On Facebook, we're at Full Story WSHU. Let's bring in Professor Hermann Kutz. He's an associate extension educator for sustainable families and communities with the University of Connecticut, the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Professor Kutz, how are you, sir? Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm okay. Thanks so much for this invitation.
It's our pleasure. Professor, you teach something called urban farming. Is that correct?
That's correct. The name of the program is Yukon Extension Urban Agriculture Program.
Okay. When you say urban farming, are you talking about in the cities, growing it in community gardens, on windowsills, rooftop gardens? Can you give me a little description?
It's everything you mentioned. Urban agriculture goes very small scales, and it usually includes front backyards, containers, indoor growing, vertical growing, rooftops, anything that grows in urban areas, especially cities. The difference between gardening and urban farming is that when we train urban farmers, there are three key concepts that they need to keep in mind to become farmers. One, it's producing food. In this case, can be vegetables, fruits, or even livestock. Then the concept of selling, it's key. If you want to be urban farmer, you need to be thinking about selling portion or all what you produce, and then processing. So it's growing, processing, and selling. Those are three keywords that distinguish urban farming from gardening.
But tell me, some of the students don't also engage in eating?
Of course, that's the whole concept. The urban agriculture program from Yukon Extension was born as a strategy to counter food deserts and food insecurity. Food deserts, areas where we don't have places to go shop fresh food, and food insecurity is lack of access to food.
Can you tell me where your students sell their products?
great. I've been listening to your guests, and there is a verbal agreement, UConn and Connecticut Department of Agriculture. Urban agriculture participants are certified by the Connecticut Department of Agriculture as food vendors, and we engage them into local farmers markets. But let me explain a little more what the program is about, so that you have the story, and probably that makes more sense of why we do this.
Okay.
The components of the Urban Ag are classroom instruction, hands-on food production, and entrepreneurship. Classroom instruction is very academic. We focus on five modules: botany, soils, vegetable production based on organic methods, entomology, and integrated pest management. Even though this is a not-for-credit program or course, participants are required to pass each module with 70% or higher grade to get a certificate of completion at the end of the year. This is a year-round program. We usually start November to November. Then, as part of their knowledge gain, they practice. We call it laboratory practice. Every city I run this program has to have a garden, a farm, where students actually grow food based on what they have actually studied. You were talking about how to make sure that the food that you get from farmers market is safe. Part of this training touches on what is called food safety. And food safety deals with what is called the good agricultural practices. And what that means is that we teach students how to process raw and fresh food and how to properly clean it before getting into the farmers. We call it washing. So when it comes to fresh food, students learn that they need to do what is called the three washing process. They wash as best as they can the food before taking it to the farmer's market. We always advise shopper to actually inspect food and wash it before consuming or eating it. And that's another kind of a strategy to make sure that the food that we sell, it's safe. Then comes the entrepreneurial activities. As part of this program, which is very much workforce development, we train students to put together a business plan and make sure that they do understand that urban farming means business. And that's the kind of a distinction. We're training individuals to become urban farmers with the mentality of producing small scale, medium scale, and sell it locally. And that's where we connect them to the farmers market. So as vendors, they actually practice entrepreneurship. They study how to produce fresh food. They have a laboratory where they produce food, and then they practice the entrepreneurship skills at the farmers market. And that's been a great, great, great experience. For over 100 students have actually completed this program in cities like Stanford, Bridgeport, Bethel, and Danbury.
You just read my mind. I have to take a break in a minute from now, but I was going to ask how many students have gone through the program, and are you anticipating a rise in the number of students who are interested in doing this?
I'm hoping that's going to be the case, but it's really, really hard to recruit students for a year-round program, especially when they have different kinds of jobs.
Just with the 100 students who have gone through the program right now, are they anticipating a career in farming?
It's what we call the unexpected outcomes, to my knowledge, and it's something that we don't promise and we don't actually offer as part of this training, is the kinds of jobs that some of the students have actually gotten. Some students have engaged into what is called private home gardening consultants. They have been hired by farms, local farms, and they have actually engaged into their own business of fresh food production and selling.
Professor, I have to take a break. Can you stay with us for another few minutes, and we'll continue the conversation? Fantastic. Professor Hermann Kutz is with UConn. He teaches urban farming. I have two more guests coming up, and I'm going to get to them in just one moment. I just have one or two more questions left for Professor Hermann Kutz, who's with UConn. He teaches urban farming. And, Professor, since you teach that, I'd like to get your thoughts on how we can get more farmers' markets in urban settings.
That's a very interesting question, and I believe that there are some regulations and policy from the Department of Agriculture in Connecticut. For instance, I was told, based on the training for food vendors, that there are certain kind of a criteria to come up with a farmer's market. And that's very much to avoid competition between farmers' markets. Distance is one of the criteria, and the number of people served, it's a part of the criteria as well. So if we want to open a farmer's market, we need to check that around 5 to 10 miles, there is no other farmer market. So there is no competition between the two farmers' markets. That's part of the training. But you don't have to open a farmer's market, because farmer's market, it's a compilation or a gathering of farmers, and even conventional farmers or urban farmers. You can actually set what is called a booth or a tent, as when the distance between the farmer's market and the location where you are putting that tent, it's within 10 miles. So if there are no more farmers interested in joining you, you could actually start with that kind of a idea, a tent, a booth, and start promoting the local grown or locally grown food. I don't have the specifics in terms of what other criteria is behind the authorization to open or to create a farmer's market. I believe that that's a question for the Connecticut Department of Agriculture.
Professor, your program sounds wonderful, and I'd love to get you back sometime in the future so you could tell us a little bit more about it.
I'll be happy to do that. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Professor Hermann Kutz from UConn teaches urban farming. Thanks again, Professor. Be well.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Two more guests for you to round out the program. Patty Wood is the founder and executive director of Grassroots Environment Education, which runs the Port Washington Organic Farmers Market on Long Island. Hi, Patty. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Thanks for coming on. And Ethel Terry is also with us, the market manager of the Long Island Growers Market. Hi, Ethel.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for being with us. Patty, I'd like to start with you. Can you tell us about the Port Washington Organic Farmers Market? And if you could take a moment and tell us exactly what organic means, because I have to admit, I get a little confused by everything I see nowadays because I see organic, natural, and I don't know what the heck to think anymore. What does it mean when something is an organic market?
Well, we're the only actually official organic market in New York State. To be an organic grower, you have to be certified by NOFA, which is Northeast Organic Farming Association, and they have some pretty strict regulations and rules for the way the farm is run. The inputs that they're using, and just their, you know, cultural practices and so on. And it's very, and I was listening to your other guest, and, you know, they're very, very specific, not just because this is an organic farm, but because, you know, they're very concerned about making sure that the produce gets cleaned properly and is stored properly under refrigeration and so on before it is actually offered to the public for sale.
How much more does it cost to be organic?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you're just starting, you're going to have to do a lot of rehab on your chemically saturated soil. But once you've had 3 or 4 years of maintaining your land organically, then it's pretty much a routine of just using soil amendments and compost and, you know, other things that are working with nature and not actually destroying all the beneficials along with the target organisms that you're trying to manage. But you know, we have two certified organic NOFA farmers at our market, and we have an organic flower grower, and then we have a bunch of people who are actually using organic, local organic ingredients to do some food processing, and there are, you know, bakers and so on that are using local produce.
If I'm going to get to you in just one second, I just want to ask Patty, how often is your market open?
It's just open on Saturdays from 8 a.m. until noon, and it's just a very casual market. We're located on the town dock in Port Washington, so it's a really nice setting. We have a little cafe where people come and they can get themselves a cup of organic coffee and some organic baked goods and sit there. You know, when someone called and asked me to be on the show, I said, this is about, you know, local, organic, seasonal food for sure. And that, you know, is a benefit for those people in the community, the surrounding communities, who are real foodies and like to cook their own and like to pick out their own, you know, tomatoes and so on. But it is also a place where people can come and just be part of the community, sit there and talk. I always say that, you know, it's a great place for, you know, for seniors who are not really attached to a social, you know, network during the week, and on the weekend at the farmers market they come and they just really, really enjoy themselves. So it's great. We have about 16-17 vendors, and it's we've been doing this for almost 20 years.
You mentioned tomatoes, and I'm sitting here thinking there is nothing like a real tomato, and
especially heirlooms.
You better believe it. AFO, yep. Thanks for holding on. What's the Long Island Growers Market?
Well, thank you for inviting me on this evening, or actually this afternoon. Well, basically, the Long Island Growers Market started 30 years ago in Islip. That was the first market on Long Island that ever opened. And the reason it opened is I'm not only a coordinator, but I'm also a large farmer in Orient Point, New York. So we needed a place for our farm and other farmers to be able to sell their product in a retail location and not a wholesale market. And as we all know, farmers and the seafood industry, when you go to a market, a wholesale market, you cannot get the price that you need for your product. So therefore, it is becoming a struggle. Our farm is probably one of the oldest farms in New York State. We're going on 400 years old. And it's a family farm. So these farmers markets really helped us to keep us farming. And we have our son and our grandchildren and our niece who continue farming alongside of us as well. So we will be continuing. I run 9 markets throughout Nassau and Suffolk County. We love the people. We love the community. I enjoy introducing new vendors. I enjoy encouraging all vendors. And one story I love to tell everybody is that Starbucks and Ben & Jerry's started in farmers markets. So farmers markets become a stepping stone for a lot of new vendors who either go on to open storefronts or they get picked up and their products get sold nationwide.
I didn't realize Ben & Jerry's started in farmers markets. I know they were up in Vermont, right? Up in Burlington?
Yes. Yes.
But you know, I have to admit, I've been to their factory, which is one of my... It's fantastic, but I didn't realize that they started in farmers markets and then opened their storefront. That's an interesting tidbit here. Do all the offerings from your markets come from farms on Long Island or New York State? How do you determine that?
Well, we're very, very tough. We have a big policy in place. You can only sell what you actually make, bake, grow, or catch. Brokers are not allowed. And with New York State, you have to be a bona fide farmer to be able to collect the WIC coupons or the SNAP programs. You know, that's around at all your farmers markets. So we have to be governed by New York State Ag and Marketing. And as a farmers market manager, you must go out and inspect all farms that participate in your market to make sure that they're actually producing what they're selling. That's something that's very important for people to know where their product is coming from. And in our farm specifically, we tell our customers, please come out to Orient, come see our farm, take a tour, and help yourself to whatever you want, but you have to pick it. And that's just something that people love to do because it's an encouragement to buy local and keep farmers farming.
Patty, it's interesting what Ethel was saying, because basically that's what the head of the Westport Farmers Market was saying a little bit earlier, that farmers will love to talk with you and tell you about their practices and their growing methods.
Absolutely.
And they just want to get out there and share.
That's right. I mean, there's nothing better than talking to their farmer, talking to the actual farmer at the market about, you know, how they grew it and, you know, what this particular variety is. And there are also a lot of interesting vegetables and fruits that show up at farmers markets that you would never find in grocery stores. Like ground cherries right now are you know, part of the markets. And ground cherries are fun. They've been around since colonial days. They're actually a fruit. They have a little husk on them. They look like a tomatillo, but a little one, a little yellow one. And they're delicious. And, you know, they have them out, you know, for people can try them. That's the other thing about a farmer's market. You can always, you know, you can always get a little taste of something before you buy it. And it's, you know, it really is a wonderful thing for people to be connected to their food source. That's something that, you know, there's very little of today. And, you know, Ethel does a lot of that because she has so many markets that she's running. We're just running this one market, and that's enough. I mean, you know, we have a very busy market. You know, it really takes us, you know, a lot. It takes a lot of time to make that market happen every Saturday. So ours only runs from the beginning of June through the end of October. And then we have 7 months off, and then we start again when our farmers have, you know, enough stuff to actually sell.
Recharge the batteries.
Ethel, yeah, recharge those batteries.
Ethel, I just have to ask you about something I touched on a little bit earlier in the program. Mm-hmm. With the climate crisis, are you seeing a difference in growing patterns nowadays and what's available at different times?
You know, my husband would like to say he wishes he had a crystal ball, because farmers can't predict the weather. Is there a climate change? Absolutely. But we farmers are so hell-bent on the climate. You know, we need rain, or you get too much rain, or you have phytophthora disease, or it gets too hot in the fall and your crops come in. So there is definitely a climate change that we definitely do feel on all aspects of farming.
Patty, you want to jump in on this?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, there are years when they have a lot of trouble, like with tomatoes. You know, they have that thing that actually the spores actually, you know, they move through the air. It's pretty hard to avoid them when you have a situation like that. But yes, climate change is having an impact. I know that you know, when you don't have enough rain, you can always irrigate, and fortunately on Long Island we have plenty of water. But when you have too much rain, that's very problematic for a farmer. And we're really looking at, you know, two of our farmers, and Ethel knows them both, the Golden Earthworm Farm, which is actually my daughter's farm, and Orient Organics, which is out there right on the tip of the North Fork. And, you know, it looks, if you look at the NOAA weather maps and you see what's going to happen in another, you know, decade, the North Fork is going to be very vulnerable to sea rise.
Ethel, any chance of getting any other farmers markets, expanding the number that you already have? And I think you said you have 9, into possibly areas that are, quote unquote, food deserts?
This is why I think we've become successful, is because we go to locations that need us. I live in Orient Point, which is the very far end of Long Island, and I don't even open my farm stand any longer because we're surrounded by farmers. So you need to find locations. As far as expanding, you have to have an area where people are going to come to you weekly and remember you when they go to local supermarkets. Right now, there's an influx of farmers markets over Long Island. They're like 7-Elevens. They're everywhere. And I really enjoyed listening to the professor from Connecticut, who stated that Connecticut has a rule that I believe he said it was a 10-mile radius for a farmers market. Well, mm-hmm. I applaud Connecticut for doing that. And I have spoken to New York State Ag and Market for many, many years regarding this. So your question is, would you open more markets? We're always open to different ideas and locations, and I turn most down because they're too close to another location and you don't want to hurt somebody. But we are opening a large indoor farmers market this year, and I'm looking forward to that to see how that's going to help our farmers and our vendors.
Sometimes it can be too much of a good thing, huh?
Exactly.
Patty?
Yeah, you know, we're an environmental health organization, a nonprofit organization. We're a science-based group that works on a lot of different environmental exposures. We work in the South Bronx with Hostos Community College, which is, I guess it's the orphan of the New York City, community college or the CUNY system. And talk about a food desert. When we first went up there, we walked 10 square blocks, and, you know, we were just looking for fresh food. And, you know, we went into bodegas and little fast food places, and, you know, other than a few spare bananas and apples at the counter, these little places, they work on such a small profit margin that they really can't afford to have fresh foods there that will spoil and they will have to throw out. So what we do is what I call the soup pot project. I go in several times during the year, and we get vegetables from some of the farms that we work with at our farmers market. They donate. And we go in and we teach them how to make soup because, of course, in these areas we have a lot of diet-related illness. We have a lot of obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes and so on. And so we're trying to teach them to use, you know, fresh foods and eat more vegetables and, you know, just – and it's cheap. It's cheap and if you know how to cook. So that's the whole point, is that we're going in and actually having you know, cooking classes using all these fresh vegetables from the area. And then we have enough donations that the kids at the college actually sell the soup the next day, and they have a small farmer's market with the leftover vegetables.
You know,
So we have a little. I mean, the city has quite a few farmers markets that they run in all of the boroughs of New York City, but this is a very specific one where the kids really know what to do with those vegetables they're selling, and they're talking to people in the community in the neighborhood, and saying, yes, you know, you can buy these, you know, these butternut squashes, and if you just add an apple and an onion, you can make this wonderful butternut squash soup.
Patty, I have to hold you there because I am out of time. I got seconds left. But I enjoyed speaking with both you and Ethel, and I hope you come back with us sometime in the future.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Patty and Ethel Terry. And that's going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone is our engineer. J.D. Allen is the producer. And Ann Lopez is the senior producer. Boy, I'm hungry. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.